Subscribe to The Spectator this summer and get the next 10 weeks of the magazine, as well as unlimited access to our website and app for just £10. Not only that, we'll send you a bottle of PIMS absolutely free, only while stocks last, so go to www.spectator.co.uk/PIMS to claim this offer now.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Isabel Hardman and Lucy Fisher, Deputy Political Editor of The Daily Telegraph. So in the last few hours, there have been two explosions outside Kabul airport, the worst of what people were expecting. Lucy, can you update us on what we know at the time of recording?
Yes, so right now, the UK's initial assessment is that there have been two explosions. The first is thought to have been a suicide bomber at the Baron Hotel, where many Afghans trying to be evacuated by Britain are being processed. That explosion was followed by a small arms fire. Then a second explosion took place very nearby at the Abbey Gate, which is the UK gate, mainly manned by British personnel. But in fact, that bomb, which is thought to have been a vehicle bomb, has ended up injuring US service personnel. And it's highly likely defence sources believe that ISIS-KP is behind the attack.
And given the pictures and the footage we've seen of the area around the airport in the last week, I mean, the death toll could be quite high.
Yes, Taliban officials have been quoted by Al Jazeera as thinking that so far the death toll has reached 13, possibly with many, many more injured. And as you say, Cindy, the footage and some of the pictures coming out from the scene are incredibly distressing. People covered in blood being carted away in wheelbarrows to seek urgent medical attention. So, tragically, we could see the death toll potentially rise further.
Isabel, the Prime Minister is due to chair a COBRA meeting later this afternoon. But is there anything that the British side can do except continue doing what it was doing before, which is speeding up evacuations?
Yeah, I mean, the message from ministers overnight, both actually the UK and the US, has been for people not to come to the airport unless they were already going through the processing centre and to head for the borders instead, which is going to raise all kinds of other issues when people do reach the borders, because it's not clear how many crossing places are actually open at the moment, and whether indeed Pakistan, for instance, are that happy about this many Afghans trying to get into the country. So I think there's a diplomatic shift that's probably about to take place in terms of talking to countries around Afghanistan, which is obviously a landlocked country. There's only a few hours left really of the British evacuation anyway, and so really the focus has been on the people who are already in the airport and on what might happen to the people who haven't been able to make it to the airports. We've had reports of some sort of secret rescues taking place of people from Kabul, but there are obviously people across the country who cannot be rescued, who cannot make it anywhere near the airport, or who have tried and who have come up against violence at Taliban checkpoints.
Lucy, John Kirby, the Pentagon press secretary, has tweeted that evacuation operations in Kabul will not be wrapping up in 36 hours. What does that mean? Because if the 31st deadline is surely to be respected, the army needs to bring itself out, then that includes the American military too. Are they rethinking that?
Well, I think the mood music from the White House has been clear. While President Biden has not ruled out an extension of US forces remaining on the ground in Kabul beyond August the 31st, he's made really clear that he is not keen to do that. I think we have to be aware that both the US and the UK are very keen to avoid confirming in any way that the end of evacuation flights are imminent. There are huge concerns about such news spreading like wildfire throughout the crowd and causing a crush of the kind that we saw at the weekend, in which people were injured and even killed. So I think we have to be aware that some of the messaging is designed to kind of create a veil of obfuscation about what the real plans are. Personally, I'd be surprised if we didn't see the flights wrapping up pretty soon, certainly on the UK side. Our forces have confirmed that they will be leaving before the US. It's the US that really are securing the perimeter of the airport. They are handling air traffic control. So it needs for all the UK to go to allow one unified command to do that last, the most dangerous part of this whole mission of packing up and being the last kind of chopper out of Kabul.
Isabel, Ben Wallace has been saying that we have to be hard-hearted, that not everyone is going to make it out, who deserves or who is eligible to be out. But do you think that the 31st is such a hard deadline that the British side will not be trying on a smaller scale to get people out? Because, you know, just before we came on air, I was seeing one of the Chevening scholars had said that he hadn't gone to the airport because of fears of the chaos. And so he's actually still in Kabul. And these are the sort of people who would have been eligible to come over had they made it there.
Yeah, this was what Boris Johnson referred to when he came out of his failed G7 bid to get an extension to the 31st deadline, where he said that he wanted the Taliban to guarantee safe passage after the end of this month for anyone who did want to leave, who was entitled to. Now, the Taliban have said they don't want to do that, that they want people to stay in the country. And so it's not clear, and it's not something that ministers have really offered any further detail on in terms of the safe passage after the evacuation effort is finished, what that's going to look like over the next few months. There are, you know, thousands of people who have not been able to get anywhere near Kabul who would be entitled to British help. So that's something that perhaps ministers will find themselves having to answer more questions on over the coming days. But at the moment, we don't know very much about what their plans are, if they have any plans, or whether they're really focused on the moment.
And Lucy, am I right in thinking that you spoke to some of those people who got to the British side earlier today? And what were they like? Who were they? What were they saying?
That's right. So at the crack of dawn, I went, got up and headed to Heathrow Airport, where I met a flight of 369 Afghans arriving, pretty exhausted. It was a range of people from well-heeled, well-dressed kind of families to people looking quite crumpled in sort of threadbare clothes and tatty sandals, pensioners down to, you know, newborn babies on that flight. And it was just really emotional, to be honest, seeing these people arrive and the mixed feelings they had. You know, I spoke to an absolutely amazing 19-year-old girl called Malalai Husseini, who talked to me about her relief at her family of nine, having fled in the dead of night. They'd had to spend 4 days sleeping on rocks outside the airport, but they all safely made it. And she spoke of her, of course, her relief at having made it safely to the UK, her hope for continuing her dreams of studying. In fact, she was studying to be a journalist at university in Kabul, but also clearly a lot of apprehension. You know, she spoke of her mother kind of bursting into tears at the uncertainty of the family's future. It was just really, really affecting to see these people who are arriving for the first day of the rest of their lives. It's not an exaggeration to say, but I must say, it is also worth kind of commenting on the kind of the tenderness and thoughtfulness of all the staff on the ground, the border officials. I spoke to a Farsi-speaking officer called Dorna, who was just treating people, some of whom are quite distressed, just with so much sensitivity. You know, Red Cross volunteers, London Ambulance Service. It was a really professional operation. And now we just have to see how many more people can be brought out as the airlift ends. And then, yeah, as Isabel says, the question turns to how the UK can liaise with the international community and third countries bordering Afghanistan to try and help people be processed if they can make their way safely over land borders to countries like Iran and Pakistan.
And Isabel, one of the people trying to get out of Kabul at the moment is Penn Farthing, who is a charity worker running an animal refuge in Kabul. But he's been accused of trying to queue jump with his numerous animals when there are people on the line. Well, what's the story there? What's going on?
So he has ended up embroiled in a row with the Defence Secretary, Ben Wallace, a row that seems to be taking up a lot of Ben Wallace's time. Ben Wallace has been tweeting about it in the small hours to clarify various things that he's been accused of. Penn Farthing was offered, as I understand it, a flight out of Afghanistan, but he didn't want to leave around 200 cats and dogs that he had at his animal shelter behind. So he managed to raise around £500,000 for a charter plane to take him, his rescue animals in the hold, and then offer seats to other people who were eligible on the plane to fly out of Kabul. But the problem is that Kabul Airport is not like Heathrow. It hasn't got, you know, a variety of different terminals and runways to take off from. And the argument that Ben Wallace was making was that it's all very well you've got this plane, but until you're at the airport, you can't park your plane on the runway because that's going to block flights for Afghans. Aside from all of that detail, it sort of descended into a row where some of Penfarthing's supporters seem much angrier about the prospect of dogs and cats being left behind in Afghanistan than they do children, than they do about the people, you know, thousands of people around the airport who've been standing and running sewage for days, panicking, and women who are frightened that they will be raped or killed now that the Taliban are back in power. And I think it says quite a lot about the British psyche, actually. You know, we are a nation of animal lovers to the extent that the donkey sanctuary in Devon, a place that I visited as a child and found luxurious in a way that few hotels I've been to since have managed to compare, is one of the most popular charities in this country. We've also had a running story this summer about Geronimo the alpaca and his owner's attempts to save him from, I think it's now being described as an assassination, because he has tested positive for TB. And I mean, you know, I say this as someone who has four pets myself. It's mad. It's absolutely just mad, because we also have farmers who have to kill their livestock the whole time because of TB, and there's very few tears being shed by the British public, who tend to quite happily eat beef without thinking about the life that the cow had up to that point. It's just a strange obsession with animals, and also the sort of the ability to turn one's mind off either to the animals that you're eating, or indeed to the fact that there are thousands of Afghan people who helped British forces, who helped the Afghan government, who are absolutely terrified for their lives. If it weren't in a war zone, it would be a silly season story, but it's actually quite a serious story, because Ben Wallace has accused this charity worker of actually hampering his civil servants and military personnel's efforts to help Afghan people as well.
It is striking, as Isabel points out, that so much of the Defence Secretary's time at this completely critical juncture, the final days, possibly even the final hours of Mercy flights, are being taken up with this. And it's often the problem with this sort of airlift is that so many people on the ground are, you know, sending out desperate messages, please for help. I've had texts, people feeling very distressed on the ground trying to get into the airport. Of course, I think it's right to feed that in and make sure that the government is aware of these people, they are on their radar. But I think there's also kind of concerns when it is suggested that people may be trying to use high-level contacts to jump the queue. And I think that might be another angle that's at play here.
Thanks, Lucy and Isabel. And thank you for listening. And do join us again tomorrow.